I'll come to order. Roll call.
Roll call for Thursday, January 17th. Anderson District 2?
Here.
Anderson District 28?
Here.
Barnard? Bebout?
Here.
Burns?
Here.
Case?
Present.
Christensen?
Here.
Coe?
Here.
Cooper?
Here.
Kraft?
Here.
Dockstader? Driscoll?
Here.
Amrick?
Here.
Esquibel? Geist?
Here.
Hastert?
Excuse.
Hicks?
Here.
Hines?
Here.
Johnson?
Here.
Landon?
Here.
Meyer? Nicholas?
Here.
Nutting?
Here.
Perkins? Peterson?
Here.
Rothfuss?
Here.
Schiffer?
Here.
Scott?
Here.
Von Flatern?
Here.
President Ross?
Here.
Barnard?
Here.
Dockstader?
Excused.
25 present, 5 excused.
Prayer by Pastor Whitmore. Oh, wait, I gotta get here.
Father, I come again today with gratitude to lift up this Senate. I pray today, God, for your source of encouragement for each one here. I think about my family and friends, and I pray for these here that they would be mindful of their family and friends that so love and support and encourage them in what they get to do today. So I pray, God, that it would be something you would use to give them just that special touch to persevere today, to accomplish the work that you have set out before them today, and that they would look back at the end of today and say, thank you. For a job well done. And God, we do thank you. Amen.
Amen. Please join me in the pledge. I pledge
allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Reading. You're excused.
You're closed out. We're going to leave at 10:30. Is that okay and go back?
Yeah.
Huh?
We'll leave at 10:30 and go back. To
you should go right after third reading. What we could do is move third reading up.
We don't. Yeah, we got. We should be pretty quick with.
We'll get through third reading. We said
you want to just want to reverse third and second and then get them out?
I don't really.
What do we have a second reading?
Second's going to be quick. I don't see anything. I think we'll just move quick.
Okay.
I don't see anything here that's.
Well, and we can always swap for them third and second.
We're going to try to leave at 10:30. We can get there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well.
Got an amendment on that one.
Okay.
Well, we don't care about that.
Yeah.
All right.
The doctor of the day is Dr. Kim Broomfield from Cheyenne. There is no nurse again. Oh, we've got reading correction approval of the journal.
Mr. President, your journal committee reports that the Journal of January the 16th, 2013, has been read and recommends that it be approved. Senator Jim Mel Anderson, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the report. Are there any objections? All those in favor say aye. There being no objections, the report is adopted. Okay, there we go. Aye. I'm looking for a bill to sign to journal. I want you to know that. Thought for the day. There are no easy answers. But there are simple answers. We must have the courage to do what we know is morally right. Ronald Reagan. Now, introduction and reading and reference of bills. Senate File 139, first reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 139, Board of Cooperative Educational Services Agreements, sponsored by Senator Anderson, 02, and Act relating to Boards of Cooperative Educational Services.
Senate File 139 is referred to Committee Number 4, Education. Reports from standing committees.
January the 17th, 2013, Mr. President, your committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom was referred Senate File 58, Driver's License Suspension for Child Support Nonpayment, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. I, Senators Barnard, Burns, Christensen, Crafton, Driscoll, Senator Burns, Chairman. January the 17th, 2013, Mr. President, your committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, Cultural Resources, to whom was referred Senate File 53, Partition Action Subject to Subdivision Laws, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. I, Senators Barnard, Burns, Christensen, Crafton, Driscoll, Senator Burns, Chairman. Mr. President, your committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom was referred Senate File 54, Limited Alcoholic Beverage Permit, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Barnard, Burns, and Kraft. No, Senators Christensen and Driscoll, Senator Burns, Chairman. January the 16th, 2013, Mr. President, your committee number 8, Transportation, Highway, and Military Affairs, to whom was referred Senate File 87, Proof of Motor Vehicle Insurance, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. I, Senators Cooper, Escobel, Landon, Schiffer, Von Fladern, Senator Von Fladern, Chairman. January the 16th, 2013, Mr. President, your committee number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, to whom was referred Senate File 16, Aeronautics Programs, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. I, Senators Cooper, Escobel, Landon, Schiffer, Von Fladern, Senator Von Fladern, Chairman. January the 16th, 2013, Mr. President, your committee number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, to whom was referred Senate File 57, Highway Speed Limit Increase, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Cooper, Landon, Schiffer, Von Fladern. No, Senator Escobel, Senator Von Fladern, Chairman.
Senator Von Fladern.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senate File 16, Aeronautics Program, does have some money on it. And absent any objections, I'd like it re-referred to Appropriations.
Senate File 60 will be re-referred to Committee Number 2 without objection. Bills on second reading. Senate File 2. Second reading of the bill.
Senate File 2, Oil and Gas Conservation Commission's filing.
Senate File 2, having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time here? No objection is so ordered. Senate File 7, second reading of the Senate File.
Senate File 7, Conservation District Special Expertise.
Senate File 7, having been read 2 separate times. The question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection is so ordered. Senate File 18, second reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 18, Professional Engineers and Surveyors Practice Act.
Senate File 18, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time, hearing no objection? It is so ordered. Senate File 27, second reading of the Senate file. There is an
Senate amendment. File 27, Limited Mining Operations.
There is an amendment. Would the reading clerk please read the amendment?
Senate File 27, second reading amendment number 1, page 3, line 13.
Senator Hicks.
Mr. President, I'd like to move standing committee or Committee of the Whole Amendment 2 to Senate File number 27.
Second reading amendment.
What's that?
Second reading amendment.
Second reading amendment. Thank you, Mr. President. Members of the body, I just wanted to hopefully bring this amendment as some clarification. If you go to page 3, line 13, it says that dealing with the reclamation, it said the reclamation would commence 30 days after the notification had been given that the mining operation was ceased. My concern is not that we commence reclamation, that is we actually complete it. So the idea is when you go through the actual process of reclamation, it requires recontouring, relaying the topsoil back in there, and then you're going to reseed this. And that's why it also, if you go down to the next section on page 14, it just says that reclamation and restoration would be completed within 9 months. You could commence under the current statute, the way this reads, you could commence reclamation, but there's no provision for requiring that you ever complete it. And that's all that's trying to do is just bring some clarification that the intent here is that you actually reclaim something. And it gives you that 9 months because that's the 9 month window that usually takes you. You can't do this in November, December, January, February, March, the ground's frozen. So it gives you that 9 month window to do the contouring, replacing the topsoil, and then doing the reseeding. The second component of this amendment, if you go to page 3, line 17, I still wasn't clear that when it came to the reclamation that included the roads. I think some of the testimony that we had yesterday, and it's not uncommon in our area that some of these roads to some of these pits may be 4 or 5 miles long. And when the mining operation is suspended, the way I read the bill as it currently stands today, there's no provision that you would be required to reclaim that road. So that's all that tries to do is get to that issue of the reclamation to make sure that it meets the intent, which I think that's what the sponsor's intent was, is to make sure that we actually had reclamation and not just commenced reclamation. Because we see that happen infrequently, but occasionally I can tell you sometimes from the time they do the recontouring, at least it's been my experience in our area in Carbon and Sweetwater County, sometimes it may be 2 years later before they actually reseed those gravel pits. So it's just trying to tighten that up and make sure that that was the intent, is that we're actually going to do the reclamation. And the other issue was reclamation on the roads. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'd ask for the body's favorable consideration.
Senator Bebout.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I would ask the amendment be divided. The first division would be 1, 2, and 6 through 11. And the second division would be lines 3 through 5.
It appears to be divisible. Would you like to speak to division number 1, which is lines 1 and 2, lines 6 through 11?
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I think that this amendment, that I could live with this, the commence to shall complete, that's fine. As far as the any road on affected land, I will read to you a response that I got from the Division of Land Quality at the DEQ. It said, and we were talking about roads as well, it said, the safety of the road shall fall under other jurisdictions for the roads used to access the operation, i.e. those covered under the bond. So roads are covered under the bond. And in terms of the operations, the operator is accountable for the safety plan, which I think might get to the concerns that my colleague from KC had, and then it goes on about county roads and YDOT and all those other things. So if the body feels they want this in there just to, for another insurance to be that it's in there, I'm fine with that, but it's already protected.
Further discussion on division number one, Senator Anderson, 02.
For the record, I'm sorry, I didn't get the. For the record, for the record, and for those out in video or audio land, this is Senator Anderson, number 2, Senate District 2, and that's probably important to my conversation about this part of the amendment. Speaking to the first part of the amendment, I want to give you an example, and I'm actually not speaking for nor against this amendment. I just want to give you an example of whether or not we might consider some sort of an exception. It seems that there's an exception to practically every rule. My hometown, you know where that's at. Come down the interstate, you look south, and up on the mountainside there's some people would call it a scar, but there's a pit up there where a tremendous amount of limestone was taken out, stockpiled around different locations along the interstate. Well, that pit, we'll call it, still remains. And if you notice, that pit has been up there well beyond 2 years. It's been up there for about 5 or 6 years or longer. And the idea being, in this limestone formation, especially on that steep mountain face, is quite difficult to reclaim. And I've watched that. There's concern upon the community as to what's being done. And actually, over the years, I think the target date is this year, 2013, they're going to start on that reclamation. But the difficulty is getting the material back out of that limestone dust and that limestone face. They have to actually concoct topsoil in order to cover that. And that's done with a lot of different ingredients, including microbes and other vegetable matter, and they call it marinating. It has to set, much like a compost pile. And so that reclamation project has been waiting for that compost, if you will, to marinate, and at such time that it can be put back on that face. So in an instance like that, it would take you well beyond the 2-year limit provided here in order to do what experts would say would be an adequate job. So I just leave that for food for thought, future consideration. That exception might exist. Thank you.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. Just to confirm, that the last comment, I think, was with respect to the 9 months. I think that's the number 2. Is number 1 the road issue?
Number 1 is the road issue, which is lines 1 and 2 and lines 6 through 11.
Okay. And, Mr. President, you know, I'd urge you to be cautious, because what happens in this inadvertently is, in most instances for these for the 10-acre exemption, now the 15-acre exemption, if this is passed, the miner has to have permission to put the road there. And in many instances, and once the obligation to reclaim exists, that's an obligation that exists to DEQ, and it would be an obligation to reclaim disregarding what the landowner, or particularly if it was owned by somebody intended, for example, to subdivide it. Some of these roads become pretty great, good roads. If they're heavy trucks, they have good bases. And as a rancher or as the owner of the property, or in this, if the mining company owns the property, they may choose not to reclaim it. And inadvertently what happens is you create a mandatory obligation that has for reclamation, because you've now required it to be reclaimed, and it's not one that can be waived by a landowner unless it's very specific. So if the notion is that this is on somebody's ranch, and you're saying, look, I don't care what you want. I can see the road, and I don't want to see the road, and I want it reclaimed. But I tell you, folks, in almost all instances, the landowner has an agreement, and he may want the road to stay, and that's a private agreement. And these agreements interfere with those private agreements because the state says, we don't care if you have a private agreement. You have an obligation to reclaim. And believe me, it happens all the time. And so I'd urge you to either, I mean, if this is what you want, and I assume that the sponsor says, look, if you put it on my ranch, and maybe you had a pre-existing right to the road, and I didn't grant it to you, my predecessor did, then I want you to reclaim it as part of your reclamation obligation. That's dependent on deeds, things like that, but that's a different situation than that really happens in these exemptions, where typically that road gets built with the idea in many instances that the road will remain for ranch purposes, for subdivision purposes, a variety of reasons.
The new Senator Anderson.
Oh, Mr. President, I on and against Division One, the replacing commence with shall complete means that says after the limited mining operations have ceased or within 30 days after abandonment of the limited mining operation, the operator shall notify the administrator of such fact and shall complete reclamation according to the DEQ's needs. Now, some of those reclamations take years because you have to actually plant the grass and have it grow before you get that completed. What we're talking about here in this bill is to commence the process, and we're trying to push them into commencement. What happens now is maybe they wait a year to commence the reclamation, but I speak against that shall complete. That changes everything, and nobody can do that.
Further discussion, Senator Hines.
Mr. Chairman, and I'll bring up and try to be brief because the majority floor leader brought up the issue too, that a lot of these roads are on private lands, and normally you'll have a agreement. There should be if you wish to have this requirement, there should be some way where a private landowner can be exempted. I know in my own case, when I work with companies not only for a mining but for a mineral development, we work together for the location, and there's certain places I want roads, and they will build a road where I want them so I can use them in the future. And also, as I understand, if it was stated where the bonds, I had one location quite a few years ago that they had to reseed three times, which took 3 years, a minimum of three times before anything would grow. And until I released it, they couldn't get their bond released. So there should be some exemption, some wording whereby a private landowner can be able to make some changes.
Further discussion, Senator Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Speaking on and against the first division first, I think we may have, and I'll ask the bill sponsor, may have a hole. These small permits, 10 acres, often will sit open for 15 years on a ranch. They sit there, and it's pretty vague in this bill, and this makes it even worse on the division of when you actually quit mining, because they may sit unused for a period of a couple years, and you keep using them. We've got one on our ranch that way that's used for road gravel. Might sit for 2 or 3 years, never go in. It's certainly not abandoned. I'd be hostile if you told me it was abandoned. As far as reclamation, you know, we keep kind of reclaiming as we go along, which issues to this first part. We kind of keep the weeds off it, and it naturally revegetates in our case. So I think this is really a bad division. And then I'd just reiterate on the last division as far as the roads. These roads are valuable often, and the guys don't want them to go away. They want them to stay for a variety of reasons. So I'd urge us to vote the first and the third division down.
Any further discussion on division number one? All those in favor of division number one? Oh, sorry.
Mr. Senator President, Hicks. For my second time,
to address some of the concerns that were being initiated. Let's talk to the issue of landowners wanting those roads. Members of the body, go to Section C in the bill. It does exactly what the good senator from Albany County and the good senator from Campbell County and the good senator from Cook County just said. This bill already has the provision in it that says if the landowner wants the road, you can have the road. This just is a backup case in case your surface use agreement with a company that come in and mine that just says that you got to reclaim the roads as well as the pit. This doesn't take the ability of a landowner. This bill protects that landowner's ability to say, I want those roads on my property. They're your roads. It doesn't take that away from you at all. So that was the one issue. Let me talk to the other issue. I guess I wasn't understanding the hard rock component of the reclamation. And I guess I would say on that particular issue, it will take more than 9 months. I was more focused on gravel pits in our area and scorial mines and those type of things. The other issue that was raised was the bonding issue. Bonding only covers the cost as if they don't do it. And I can tell you $3,000 to reclaim 5 miles of road isn't enough to do it. It's not. Cost of reclamation in the Red Desert of Wyoming ranges about $5,000 to $20,000 an acre, depending on what type of soils you go across. So if you got 3 or 4 miles of roads across you and you happen to negate that in your surface use agreement, guess who gets stuck with the reclamation? Landowner. If you want the road, you send DEQ and says, we're taking over the road. That's what the bill says. The other issue was the issue of the growing of grass. Many times it does take. In this bill, if you go back to DEQ's rules, reclamation just says that you've done all the actions necessary. We have droughts and those type of circumstances all the time. So it just says you have to go through the practice. I'll go pull those rules out again and have those for you at third reading if we want to set that aside at this point in time. The rules don't say right now that you have to have successful reclamation. You just have to reclaim it. And the definition of reclamation under DEQ rules is you recontour, you replace the topsoil, and you reseed it. So I will promise the body I'll go look that up before third reading and we can bring that out. But anyway, to the issue, I think the big one that was the most disturbing was that somehow we're requiring the companies and the landowners can't keep those roads. That's well addressed in subsection C. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
No. Question is on division number one. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No. That division has failed. We're now on division number two, which is lines 3, 4, and 5 of the amendment. Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. President. Members of the body, you didn't like the previous amendment. This one's worse. For all the reasons that have been discussed, so I would ask that you defeat it.
Discussion? Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. President, I would take issue at the proposition that reclamation is completed in 9 months or upon completion of the activity. In most of these instances, your reclamation obligation under DEQ is not complete until the forage is established to the condition it was at the time of mining. And in many instances, that this might take 3 or 4 growing seasons to get a seed bed back sufficient to restore the property to its pre-mining state. Now, if you started off with a limestone outcropping that had no grass, you might get back in one season. But in most instances, there was grass before, and you have to restore to that. And in many instances, you'll have to fence it off, keep your livestock off of it, and you will not get your bonds released, and you will not complete your reclamation action until the grass on it has actually reached a restoration equivalent to the pre-mine state.
Further discussion on division number two. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. No.
All those opposed?
No.
No.
I voted twice.
Division number two has failed. Senate File 27 have been read two separate times. The question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, is so ordered. Senate File 51, second reading of the Senate File.
Senate File 51, Federal Motor Carrier Safety Act Compliance.
Senate File 51 have been read two separate times. The question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, is so ordered. Senate File 67.
Senate File 67, Wiretap Authorization.
Senate File 67 haven't been read two separate times. The question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, is so ordered. Senate File 74.
Senate File 74, Professional Licensing Military Spouses.
Senate File 74 haven't been read two separate times. The question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, is so ordered. Senate File 78. Second reading of Senate File.
Senate File 78, Active Duty Medical Cost Reimbursement Program Amendments.
Senate File 78, haven't been read two separate times. The question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, so ordered. Bills on third reading and final passage. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, do you have a consent list?
I do, Mr. President. Mr. President, the consent list, as shown on your green sheets, as I read it out, is going to remove the first and last one. So Senate File 11, Circuit Court Magistrates, and Senate File 52, Natural Gas State Vehicles, those are moving down to the regular list. So with that in mind, I move the following consent list on third reading. Senate File 14, Correctional Industries. Senate File 15, Inmate Transfers. Senate File 17, Community Juvenile Services. Senate File 20, State Land Transactions. Senate File 22, Uniform Consumer Credit Code Amendments. Senate File 26, Authorization for Certain Radioactive Waste Facilities. And Senate File 40, Cultural Trust Fund Board Membership.
Would anyone like any of the bills on the consent list removed? Having been read three separate times, the question is, shall these bills pass the Senate? Senate File 14, Correctional Industries. Senate File 15, Inmate Transfers. Senate File 17, Community Juvenile Services. Senate File 20, State Land Transactions. Senate File 22, Uniform Consumer Credit Code Amendments. Senate File 26, Authorization for Certain Radioactive Waste Facilities. And Senate File 40, Cultural Trust Fund Board Membership. The Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson, District 2. Anderson, District 28. Barnard. Bebout. Burns. Case. Christensen,
aye.
Coe,
aye.
Cooper,
aye.
Kraft,
aye.
Dockstader, Driscoll,
aye.
Amrick,
aye.
Esquibel,
aye.
Geis,
aye.
Hastert,
aye.
Hicks,
aye.
Hines,
aye.
Johnson,
aye.
Landon,
aye.
Meyer,
aye.
Nicholas,
aye.
Nutting,
aye.
Perkins,
aye.
Peterson,
aye.
Rothfuss,
aye.
Schiffer, Scott,
aye.
Von Platern,
aye.
President Ross,
aye.
On the consent list, 30 ayes. Senate File 14, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 14, 30 ayes. Senate File 15, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 15, 30 ayes. Senate File 17, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 17, 30 ayes. Senate File 20, are there any changes? Burns, Itunu. Case, Itunu. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 20, 28 ayes, 2 noes. Senate File 22, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 22, 30 ayes. Senate File 26, are there any changes? Burns, aye to no. Scott, aye to no. Christensen, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 26, 27 ayes, 3 noes. Senate File 40, are there any changes? Landon, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 40, 29 ayes, 1 no.
Having received the affirmative vote of the majority members elected to the Senate, Senate File 14, Senate File 15, Senate File 17, Senate File 20, Senate File 22, Senate File 26, and Senate File 40 have passed the Senate. Eli, you need to go just... Senate File 11, third reading of the Senate File.
Senate File 11, Circuit Court Magistrate, sponsored by the Judiciary Committee, and Act relating to magistrates of the Circuit Court, being enacted by the Legislature of the State of Wyoming.
Chairman Schiffer.
Mr. President, I ask for this bill to be pulled off the consent list. And I'm going to ask the Senate to vote no on this bill. Mr. President, a number of years ago, the legislature chose to go in and reform the court system in this state. That involved traveling around the state, taking a lot of testimony. It was a select committee that did it. And a little bit of history on, and particularly where it applies to this, to Senate File 11. At that time, particularly the smaller, less wealthy counties in some cases had a JP. The JPs were all elected by the residents of that county. He was a full-time judicial officer. Some were law-trained and some were not. But they were, in fact, the administrator of justice at that level, at this, what is now the circuit court level, in those states. The Select Committee did not do away with any JPs. But what we did is we made it so very attractive for those counties that they would opt in to the circuit court system. We gave them financial incentives. We gave the non-lawyer JPs less authority. As a matter of fact, we gave the JPs with a law degree a little bit less authority than what your circuit court judges have now. We offered to pay for the court, and at that time, the JP courts were a financial obligation of those counties, totally, 100%. We provided incentives to bring them into the circuit court system. In addition to that, we made a promise to them that they would have a full-time judicial representative in each of those counties. Hence, what is known now as the full-time magistrates. They act on behalf of the circuit court in their area,
but they are full-time in those counties. So they have access for all the things that judges get called on to do 24/7. That promise was made, and those local communities bought it. They took us at our word, quite frankly. And for all practical purposes, we have eliminated JP courts. But it was a promise. It was a bargain. What you're being asked to do in this bill is renege on that promise. The effect of this bill will be, if the Supreme Court decides, remember these are five people, in Cheyenne, except they don't even all sit as judges in Cheyenne. Some of them are in other towns, and I don't know whether they come in when they feel like it or whenever. But they will have total jurisdiction. And what they're doing is saying, no, if you live in one of those isolated counties, a couple of them over in the basin, a couple of them down here in the southeast corner, we're going to renege on that promise to you. Now, Mr. President, I realize that this is a budget-cutting deal. If they don't have to pay that full-time magistrate, they save money. But I'm going to suggest that there are alternatives that would save an equal amount of money. One of them, and I did some checking, at every single...
1 minute.
Mr. Chairman, if I go over, I'll live with that. I hope you will also. With all due respect. One of those alternatives is that you can administer justice using telecommunications. For example, at the prison in Rawlins, at the judge's discretion, rather than, inmates of Rawlins have legal problems, well, they got there by legal problems, but they have ongoing all the time, you know, the jailhouse lawyers and all that stuff, they're always appealing this and all that. You can transport those prisoners from the prison to the district court if you want to. But the alternative is you do it over telecommunications. I checked on it just for that one court, and it's the judge's discretion. In 60% of those cases, that's how they do it. That saves the risk of transporting, the expense of transporting, and the timeliness of taking care of the needs of those prisoners. You could do the same thing in these small counties if you chose to do it. And remember, Mr. President, that the Supreme Court levies two filing fees of $10 on every filing in the court. Now, the first one is old. It was implemented back in the 80s. As near as I can tell, that filing fee has disappeared. I mean, it's still going on, but it is not dedicated to telejudicial purposes anymore. It's disappeared, actually, but we still levy it. Supreme Court still gets some money. The second one, I believe, most of it is dedicated to a telejudiciary system. They could use that and provide that 24/7 magistrate if needed. Instead, what they've opted to do is say, give us the authority to eliminate that full-time magistrate. That's wrong. That is absolutely wrong. It was a promise made. I firmly believe, no matter where you live in Wyoming, whether you live in a Johnson County or a Laramie County, you should have access to justice on an equal basis. And when we reformed the court, that was one of the guiding principles we used. Is you should have access. And we can do it in this modern age. But what is being proposed here is to say, if you live in one of those full-time magistrate counties, you're out of luck. We are going to eliminate your full-time magistrate. What I'm asking, Mr. President, is that you vote this bill down, make the court go back, and figure out a better way to do it. Rather than cut service, let's figure out an alternative, modern way to fulfill our obligation to provide equal access to justice in every single community in this state. I ask you to vote no on Senate File 11.
Discussion. Senator Christensen.
Mr. Chairman, I rise not only to add information, but give my chairman another opportunity to speak if he so needs it. The bill is presented to the Judiciary Committee. The Senate Judiciary Committee had some challenges, and we did improve the bill, I believe. On page 2, the language that says they can't just eliminate a magistrate. If they do eliminate, or if they choose not to have a full-time magistrate, they must go with a part-time magistrate. And so there's still some protection for the community and a little bit of room for the courts to operate also. And just a clarification that the bill as amended is better than it arrived in the Senate Judiciary Committee.
Further discussion, Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. President. I got fired as the Judiciary Chairman, but anyway, that was an interim study that we had, and what we did, what this legislature did, is we went out in the last session, and we asked all the departments to go out and find 4% out of their budgets and cut it out. And the governor came back and asked for 8%, but of course, the court system is a separate branch of government, and the governor doesn't necessarily get to instruct the court what they can and can't do. With we call that separation of powers. But ultimately they went out and they came back with a series of proposals that they presented, and this was one of them, to try and meet their 4%. And interestingly, my good friend from KC, I think some of his comments were exactly why I think that it's appropriate that we move to a part-time magistrate at this time. And what that is telecommunications. That works now. We have judicial access in our communities, and we can continue to work on that. And the court has made great strides. The Supreme Court's made great strides in making, if there's not someone there, to use modern technology to make sure that you can have access to justice and to your judicial authorities when you need it. We have telecommunications. We have e-citations. We have e-warrants. We have those opportunities. And when we have a part-time magistrate, we still are going to have a judicial authority on site in those counties. And ultimately, as we go back and tighten our belts, this will be one of the first of many tough decisions that we're asked to make as we go back this year to try and cut this 4%, and as we come back next year to try and make a further reduction in our budgets. So, ultimately, when we do this, I think that this is a great compromise position between not having any judicial authority in a county, but still maintaining a presence part-time along with the other electrical and technological access that's available. So I'd encourage you to vote this bill up.
Mr. Jordan, floor leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I'd ask you to support the bill. And with my colleague from KC, I agree. This, when we started the system of court reformation and court reorganization, we wanted to make sure we had presences in every county and that sort of thing. But at that time, we were coming out of one system and going to the next system. But, folks, this is the first of a series of votes you're going to be called upon to make to control your budgets. They're tough decisions, but you can't say, look, there's only one way to deliver it. We want one judge, one judicial administrator. We want these employees. We want this level of service in our courts. And you're required to have all these positions and then say, now we're going to cut your salaries. This is a branch of the government whose budget is entirely, for the most part, salaries. And the judicial positions we create. So if you want a judge in Albany County, you create the judgeship there, and they're required to have it there. They can't eliminate it unless we eliminate it from the statute or requirement to have that judge there. So we legislatively mandate these requirements, and then when we demand reductions, they come back and said, well, this is our statutory obligation, and given that obligation, this is what our budget has to be. And they've come back, and certainly I know that if you're a small community and losing your magistrate, it's not easy, but it's just part of the belt tightening that happens. And I think they do have to stand up. They need to find alternative ways to provide these deliver the justice to those systems. And, you know, I don't mean to be callous about it, but when you live in a small community, and one of the benefits is you don't have magistrates. Thank you.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. President. I guess on and against this this bill, as my good colleague from KC was reviewing some of the history of, I was serving as the county commissioner at the time, and that was my first visit to the Capitol in the Appropriations Committee room, of which I would later serve on. And I remember talking to or presenting our case. But the actual history of that was, as we implemented this as a state legislature, this offer wasn't offered to all counties. 15 of the counties, the larger counties, were offered the circuit court, paid for by the state. Smaller counties, such as mine, weren't given that opportunity. We had to pay for our own. And it was somewhat offensive, and so I came down and protested to our Appropriations Committee, and the good senator from Sheridan County at the time was chairman, and I shared the story with him that it's just good manners that my mom taught me years ago, that if you don't have that type of money, or don't have that enough treats for all the kids in the class, then you better keep those treats in your pocket and not share them with half the class. And I argue the same point here. There is a budget. We do need to balance it. The effort has been made by our judiciary department, our branch, but it always seems to be on the backs of the smaller counties and the rural areas. And this is a small state. It's a small state, and there's got to be a better way. And I would concur with my good colleague from KC and vote this thing down and go back to the drawing board and figure out a better way. Thank you.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I think, and as we look at the budget process, I think we have to look at, as the budget process as a whole, that we have a goal across all levels of government to reduce it by a set amount. And if we vote this down, then it'll be up to the Appropriations Committee and this floor subsequently to make sure that we do get those total reductions and come in with a balanced budget. And if you look at the executive branch, there are some agencies where not only was there not a cut, but there was also a supplemental request. And Parks and Recs comes to mind. And there was no cuts. All the cuts were restored, and a supplemental request was put on by the governor. You look at the history of Parks and Rec. So over the last 10 years, they've dropped dozens of employees. So maybe that was appropriate. But we have to look at all of these things in the context of the whole. And so when you make this vote, look at it in the context of the whole, as far as a budget required cut of the entire state budget. And I think look at the promises that we've made and realize that we have to look at the judicial branch as a branch that's exceptionally small compared to the executive branch or any other part of the government, and know that we do have to have the ability to have representation to our citizens for the services that the judicial branch provides.
Further discussion? Senator Schiffer.
Mr. President, and I'll be very, very brief. First of all, in terms of the discussion on this bill, and I went back through the minutes of the interim, and there was absolutely no discussion of utilizing telejustice in lieu of just eliminating those positions. And what I'm really asking for, if you vote this bill down, then it would behoove the Supreme Court to at least consider telejustice, or however, whatever you want to title that sort of business. But they didn't even consider it. It was, we're going to cut services for those counties, period. Kind of the old motto of do less with less and let the people pay for it. And as far as the discussion, that just because you live in a small community, you are not entitled to access to justice, I believe is fundamentally wrong. We can do it, should do it, but we have to deliver it in a little different fashion than what we envisioned 12 years ago, because we made tremendous strides. But we can at least give those people in those counties with less population the access to justice equal to what happens in the larger counties. I ask you to vote no.
Senate File 11. Having been read three separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? The chief clerk will call the roll.
Anderson, District 2.
Aye.
Anderson, District 28.
Aye.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout.
No.
Burns. Case.
Aye.
Christensen.
Aye.
Coe.
No.
Cooper.
Aye.
Kraft. Dockstader.
Aye.
Driscoll.
No.
Amrick.
Aye.
Esquibel.
No.
Geis.
No.
Hastert.
Aye.
Hicks.
No.
Hines.
Aye.
Johnson.
No.
Landon.
Aye.
Meyer.
No.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Nutting.
Aye.
Perkins.
Aye.
Peterson. Rothfuss.
Aye.
Schiffer.
No.
Scott.
Aye.
Von Flatern.
Aye.
President Ross.
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 19 ayes, 11 noes.
Senate File 11, having received the affirmative vote of the majority members elected to the Senate, Senate File 11 has passed the Senate. Senate File 31, third reading of the Senate File.
Senate File 31, Wyoming Veterinarian Medical Practice Act, sponsored by the Agriculture Committee, and Act relating to veterinarian, be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
There is an amendment. The reading clerk will please read the amendment.
Senate File 31, third reading amendment number 1, corrected copy, page 1, line 2.
Senator Emmerich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And for the second time, I bring you the corrected copy of third reading amendment to Senate File 31. The purpose of this is to clarify responsibilities for the euthanasia of domestic animals and to clarify that this is not affecting any...
Senator Emmerich, you need to move the amendment.
I will move... Please. I'm sorry, sir. I move that amendment, and it's merely a clarifying amendment to not infringe upon the rights and duties of game and fish wardens. And I would ask for your support on this, and then I'll discuss the bill.
Any further discussion on third reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 31? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That amendment's been adopted. We're back on the bill. Is there any further discussion? Senator Emmerich.
I just want to say that what this bill does is it takes a board responsibility and structure and moves it to another board with all the responsibilities and costs and eliminates the Board of Euthanasia at a fairly considerable savings to the state. Thank you.
Further discussion? Senate File 31, having been read three separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? The chief clerk will call the roll.
Anderson, District 2.
Aye.
Anderson, District 28.
Aye.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
Aye.
Christensen.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
Kraft.
Aye.
Dockstader.
Aye.
Driscoll.
Aye.
Amrick.
Aye.
Esquibel.
Aye.
Geist.
Aye.
Hastert.
Aye.
Hicks.
Aye.
Hines.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Meyer.
Aye.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Nutting.
Aye.
Perkins.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Rothfuss.
Aye.
Schiffer.
Aye.
Scott.
Aye.
Von Flatern.
Aye.
President Ross.
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 30 ayes.
Senate File 31, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, Senate File 31 has passed the Senate. Senate File 52, third reading of the Senate File.
Senate File 52, Natural Gas State Vehicle, sponsored by the Minerals Committee, an act relating to motor vehicles, be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I ask that this bill not be taken off the consent list based on an understanding from one of our fellow senators that there was more to the fiscal impact and the fiscal note than was presented to the body. And I appreciate that clarification so that we could bring it to everybody's attention. So before you in your box, you have the complete results of the fiscal analysis, at least to the best extent that was provided. And, Mr. President, there are some substantial changes here. I'd point out on page 3 for A&I in particular, A&I came back with a fiscal estimate for fiscal year of 2014 of about $332,600, which is substantially more than what we've discussed up to this point. Furthermore, in my view, there's actually some problems with their analysis because they talk about conversion when only new purchases would be required. Based on the difficulties we have with this fiscal note and the fact that it substantially changes, in my view, the opinions of the body, I would ask without objection that the bill be laid back until tomorrow to give some more time for thought on this amended fiscal note, as well as to possibly put together a third reading amendment that might help to address the fact that this fiscal note's changed. I'd point out again to the body that there was no testimony when we were working this on the interim that there would be a required appropriation at any point when we heard from agency after agency for this, and yet we have some rather conflicting fiscal information in front of us. So without objection, I'd ask that this be laid back.
Without objection, Senate File 52 will be laid back a day for third reading. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, we're at that order of business, consideration of bills on general file. Just a moment. Go ahead. Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, your Appropriations Committee will continue our markup right now in the GAC room.
Thank you. Senator Nicholas.
Strong. Mr. President, I move that the Senate resolve itself into the Committee of the Whole.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Senator Johnson.
Committee of the Whole will please come to order. The first bill for our consideration is Senate File 9. The reading clerk will please read the file.
Senate File 9, Private Transfer Fees, sponsored by the Judiciary Committee, an act relating to real property.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your... Oh, okay.
It was referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Burns, Christensen, Esquibel, Hicks, and Schiffer, Senator Schiffer, Chairman.
now. You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Schiffer.
Senate File 9, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 3.
Mr. Chairman, I will also move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 9. For a discussion of this good committee bill, I would yield the floor to Senator Esquibel.
Senator Esquibel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senate File 9 is a committee bill, and it deals with private transfer fees. This is an act relating to real property, clarifying provisions, defining private transfer fees, and making permanent the private transfer fee provision. Mr. Chairman, I'll ask that the Standing Committee amendment be adopted, and I'll discuss part of that as I go down and explain the reason for this bill. Give you some background. Wyoming Statute 34-28-101 through 103 was passed in the 2012 session. It prohibits the imposition of private transfer fees in real estate transactions with some defined exceptions. Private transfer fees are fees that can be collected on the second and possibly subsequent sale of property. For example, a developer sells property and reserves to himself or herself a payment that would be made when the first buyer sells the property. The legislature determined that this practice could burden future sales of the property and prohibited that practice. Unfortunately, the law was not as clear as it might have been on excluding mineral transactions from the provision on private transfer fees. Senate File 9 was amended in committee and is intended to fix the uncertainty in the current law. As amended, the bill inserts in 34-28-103 a new subsection D that makes it clear that mineral transfers and associated service rights, such as a surface use agreement, are not affected by the law. This is needed because mineral rights transfers often provide for different payment mechanisms over time, and there is no concern that transfer of mineral rights and associated service rights will burden property in the state. The Standing Committee amendments on page 2, sections A and B, are simply clarifying amendments and are consistent with the addition of new subsection 103D. The deletion of July 1, 2014, on page 3, lines 9 and 10, gets rid of an inconsistency in the current law and makes clear the legislative intent that prohibits private transfer fees as of April 1, 2012. The Standing Committee amendment was supported by all parties, and there was no opposition to the bill in committee. At this point, Mr. Chairman, I would stand for any questions and ask this, the Standing Committee amendment be voted on.
Any questions on the Standing Committee amendment? Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Schiffer's motion to adopt the Standing Committee amendment to Senate File 9, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Standing Committee amendment to Senate File 9 has been passed. Senator Esquibel.
And if there are any questions, I would try to
any
answer.
Any questions on Senate File 9? Okay, I've been told we have a committee of the whole amendment. Okay. Committee of the whole amendment number 1, Senator Schiffer.
Senate File 9, Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1, delete the Senate Standing Committee amendment.
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, in looking at this bill and understand what we're doing here,
Senator Schiffer, would you please move the amendment?
Pardon me. I move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 9. What we're doing in this bill is ensuring in statute that we can make the mineral estate, and particularly the primacy of the mineral estate, absolutely clear when it comes to transferring a real property. And in reading it, we wanted to make that crystal clear. So what we're doing in Committee of the Whole Amendment, number one, in lines 1 through 21, we're reinstating the Standing Committee Amendment. So it stays exactly the way it is as you just approved it. But what we're adding is, rather than the language on lines 20 through 24 of the Standing Committee Amendment, we're breaking that down to cover the two situations that we have in Wyoming. One is, we're saying you can't come in and charge those fees on mineral rights, interests, and obligations. That covers it for the mineral estate. Part two, and this is on line 33, and this is the real change we're getting at, and that's the situation where you have the mineral estate underlying the deeded estate of the same people. And we want to make sure that that is absent. Did I say that right? Yes, I think I did. The mineral estate belongs to the owner of the surface estate. And that's what we're dealing with in 33 and 35. When we start saying the transfer of any surface rights pertinent to a mineral right or interest or obligation which has been severed from the surface estate. That's what we're getting. I didn't say it right. It's when the surface and the mineral are severed, we want to protect the primacy of that mineral estate, and that's what this does. I think it's somewhere around 25-30% of the area of Wyoming, and we want to make that absolutely crystal clear, and that's what this amendment does. I would stand for questions.
Questions on the Committee of the Whole Amendment? Questions? Hearing none. All those in favor of Senator Schiffer's motion to adopt this Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 9, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 9 has passed. Back on the bill. Senator Hines.
Mr. Chairman, I'm wondering, I can't remember when we worked on it before, but just what does this cover in the transfer fees? Can someone from the committee explain to me just what it's covered and charged a transfer fee on?
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, transfer fees are they've actually been around for quite a while. And as land changes hands, real property changes hands, people sometimes have a desire to reach out, for example, and say, sell it to somebody. Say, by the way, if you ever sell this again, I want to reach out and get part of that pot. That's one way to do it. If in the case of a mineral interest, the same thing. If you ever sell that, I want to reach out and get part of the action. There's all sorts of ways. I guess if you had to categorize it, they're selling something, but they're not really selling something. They want to keep part of it or whatever. And we're saying when you sell something, you give title to it, it's got to be kind of clear that what you're doing, and you have to let future generations know that you're going to reach out from the grave and bedevil their whole life.
Further questions?
Question.
Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Schiffer's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 9, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 9 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 68.
Senate File 68, Sales Tax Zapping, sponsored by the Revenue Committee, an act relating to taxation and revenue. It was referred to Committee Number 3, Revenue, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Anderson, 28. Senators Case, Emmerich, Peterson, Von Flader, and Senator Peterson, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the Senate file. What is your pleasure, Senator Peterson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move that when the Committee of the Whole rise to report that it do so with the favorable recommendation on Senate File 68. There are no standing committee amendments, and so for further explanation, I would turn to our good Senator from Gillette.
Senator Von Flader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senate File 68 is tax zapping. And what tax zapping is, many of you have probably gotten some comments about it, is it's software and hardware that you can purchase to put on electronic cash register, which most businesses operate with. And you can ring up the sale for whatever the customer has purchased. It'll correctly put the amount of sales tax on. You collect the money. And through this software, you can hit a button, basically, and it'll wipe that sale off of there. So you've collected the sales tax. If you're audited, there's no record of having made the sale to begin with. So if you sent the department in $10 for your monthly sales tax collection, you should have sent $12 in. You're saving your $2 because it'll only show that you had $10 worth of taxable transactions that month. So what this bill does says that software and hardware is illegal in this state. And, of course, we have a vested interest in it because sales tax is the other leg of our taxing, our income stool for the great state of Wyoming. So what it does is, since I get out of this, Mr. Chairman, taxation goes down. It's new language. We amend Section 3915-108, and under enforcement, it's automated sales and suppression device. The following shall apply. And as used in this subsection, automated sales suppression device or zapper means the following. And basically, as I said, software, hardware that can be tied on to a cash register. B is what an electronic cash register definition is, which is a device that keeps supporting device documents. So, for, of course, audits in the future. It's the way we'd look to see what the business was selling and if they're collecting the proper amount of tax. Phantomware on line 15 of page 2 under C. Phantomware means a hidden pre-installed or installed at a later time programming option embedded in the operating system and electronic cash register or hardwired into the electronic cash register, which can be used to create a virtual second till. So you would have record, any auditor coming in, anybody looking at it, would never see that transaction that you zapped off your system. And it would manipulate the records. Transaction data, had to put a definition in that, which is readable by everyone here. And a transaction report means the report documenting data, including but not limited to data associated with sales tax collected, media totals, and discounts that can be voided at an electronic cash register, which is printed or cash register tape. For those in the retail business, all this is automatic, but know that that electronic cash register is doing this work for you. Basically, they're computers, and a lot of times you do see them use their computers that are actually hooked up as cash registers. Line 19 of page 3, this is the meat of this bill, actually. Little double I says, no person shall knowingly sell, purchase, possess, install, transfer, or use any automated sales suppression device, zapper, or phantomware.
So in other words, you can't have it there, even if you're, of course, testifying that you don't use it. But we would actually not know unless we did a sting, the Department of Revenue did a sting operation on you. And then triple little I, does the violation will be a felony, punishable by fines of $5,000, imprisonment up to not to exceed 3 years. Line 4 on page 4 seems a little redundant to what I just read above about possession and use of a zapper, but since they probably do exist and they can be used for legitimate reasons like cleaning up voided transactions, we leave in there that it shall be a defense to any prosecution under this subsection that the person purchased, possessed, installed, transferred, or used an automated sales suppression device, zapper, or phantomware for a legitimate purpose. So we are not trying to, we're sort of, by this, you could be grandfathered in, and of course the prosecution would have to prove that you're using it for illegal purposes at this point. Line 10 of page 4, the offense created by the will be in addition to, so any offense created by this section will be in addition to and considered a separate offense from any offense related to the non-payment of taxes. So just because you get arrested and prosecuted for having the zapper and using it, you are also still owing the taxes that you, whatever they can prove you, might have zapped off of your transaction records. And once again, any of these devices shall be considered contraband, shall be subject to seizure, confiscation, and forfeiture. And then Section 2 talks about this act is effective immediately. Because it's illegal to withhold sales tax from the state, the sales tax that the state is owed for any transaction you did incur in your business, there was no education time. I mean, this, you are acting illegally now, and so that's why this act is effective immediately, and we do not have to put out a program of educating retailers to tell them that they can't use these. Because if they're using them, they don't want to probably admit they're using them because they know they should know they're cheating the state. All the retail organizations, their representative came into the meeting and said they see no unintended consequences and they have no issues with this bill. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I'll stand for questions.
Senator Anderson, 02.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a series of questions that may have come up in discussion during testimony, and I stand fully in support of the bill. First of all, is this known to occur in Wyoming or to have occurred in Wyoming? Second, how prevalent is it thought to be? Is there any estimate of the cost or the loss of revenue as a result of kind of what's gone on in the past? Again, I say estimate. And then the last part of the question is, what might the challenges be to the Department of Revenue in order to institute this legislation and enforce it, and how is it detected? So that's all I have. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Case, I think you stood up first.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There's no evidence that this has happened in Wyoming. This is more precautionary. So there's no estimate of any taxes loss or anything. There were some fairly sophisticated examples that were provided and where stings were conducted to actually catch this. And the first tip-off occurred when somebody actually mixed up and had two sets of books and ended up, the Department of Revenue in another state ended up with both sets of books. Bingo. But, Mr. Chairman, I actually voted against this in committee. I've had a little bit of a hard time with it, not because I'm for people cheating on their taxes, but this is the first time we make the possession of these devices, whether it's a program or conceivably a program could come in email and be in your computer, but it's about the possession of either the zappers or the software. That's actually a crime under this bill. It's not the use of them. A lot of things are illegal on the use, but not on the possession, and sometimes that gets my dander up slightly. But it's only up very slightly on this bill, I will assure you. It's probably a good bill.
Senator Scott?
Mr. Chairman, my question relates to page 4, lines 4 through 8. It is a defense to any prosecution section in there. And my concern is that by having that section in the bill, we may introduce a loophole that you could drive almost anything through and remove the effectiveness of this bill. And I'm wondering what harm would be done if on second reading we should zap lines 4 through 8 on page 4.
Senator Escobar.
The question I had was, you know, with what little I know of electronic devices, is that it seems like, you know, they change so quickly that, you know, that it's beyond my imagination. I was just wondering if there might be, or if the committee heard of other examples of electronic hardware that would be able to do the same thing that this is meant to prohibit, to eliminate, but come under other names other than zappers or phantomware. I just wonder the change of terminology, or, you know, sometimes you can just change circuitry, I guess, and it might take it out of the definition that we're trying to address. Thank you.
Senator Von Fleischer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And in answer to the good senator sits in front of me, I think the line, well, it's on 6, and that addresses on page 4, which I will address the tall senator. So let's go to line 3, should we leave this language in. Page 3, line 19 through 21, where it says, or use any automated sales suppression device. I think that would encompass, as you can foresee into the future, what it may do, or they may have different names that don't fall under Zapper or Phantomware, but at least that should cover what we can foresee happening. As far as the tall senator from Natrona County on page 4, lines 4 through 7, I definitely asked the committee asked that question, and not having a legal mind, I didn't quite get it all, but I really think that your suggestion that if it disappeared or was zapped and became a phantom, that it would be fine.
Senator Roth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, looking a little further at the idea regarding the possession or installation or just getting rid of any acceptable reason, you can be doing research on these types of things. You can be coding similar code yourself and looking at that type of code to accomplish the same objectives. In fact, in my life at one point, I used code from a virus to program something that I needed to program because it did it well. It was not malicious. It was handy. It was a nice piece of code. So typically, possession of information technology and code is not generally criminalized because it can be used for multiple purposes. There are multi-use for most of these types of things. It can be research. It can be legitimate programming and information technology support, or it can be zapping. So I would certainly caution before we start saying you can't have or possess or install one of these types of things, because that can be a very reasonable, straightforward, and logical use. However, using it for the application clearly is something that I think we can support as being illegal. So I would certainly oppose taking off those points or zapping them on page 4. And I'd also suggest that we look to amending the installation or possession of that type of technology, because it's just lines of code. Until you do something with it, it's just lines of code.
Senator Christensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
My question, if this is really about getting out of paying taxes, don't we already have a more general law that would cover this as opposed to the next bazooka zapping program or trying to name programs or viruses or anything or even electronic pieces of equipment that are going to come and go in the, just the next near future? And it seems like it's much more of a general tax crime that is probably covered, spirit of it is probably covered somewhere else rather than trying to come up with something for every virus or every device.
Senator Von Flader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To the good senator from Albany County, his question about possession being an issue because you may be using it for something else. I think if you read the language in here, it says means a software program accessed by any means whatsoever which falsifies the electronic records of an electronic cash register. So if you're not using it for that, you're actually working with it itself. I think the possession of a electronic device not tied in any kind of cash register, and that would phantomware means a hidden pre-installed or installed at a later time programming option embedded in the operating system an electronic cash register. So once again, if you didn't have it in the cash register, and then I'm sure there is academia rules and regs or granted rights to use certain things outside that are illegal outside of the laboratory, but I don't know that for fact. But I think you could argue that every one of these says in a cash register, tied to a cash register. And so if it's called Zapper, if the actual product is called Zapper and it states that a Zapper, you can be, yes, I can't argue that. If it says you cannot have a thing called a Zapper, and its brand name is Zapper, I guess you can't have it in possession. As far as the good senator from way over in the other state, I would say that the fact that they've created a piece of hardware is why we need to make that illegal in itself, because it is so sophisticated that unless we sent the new IT department in there on every audit of every sales tax audit, that would be the only way to discover it. And so we would have to train all these auditors how to go through software and hardware and identify it within the internal workings of a cash register to think that they had it or not. So by making it illegal, they may be able to catch somebody, because you could have it in there and say, I don't use it, and you wouldn't be able to follow a trail. And so by just making it illegal to have it in there, that's the difference.
Further questions, comments? Senator Anderson, 28.
Campbell County. I have a franchise agreement with a group out of Texas, and they've been warning us about this for some time. The franchisers all have commission on your sales, so a party could use this Zapper to not show the sales. Obviously, it wouldn't show the sales tax also, but they would be behind this completely, that you don't have that in your possession, and that's what they're asking of the franchisees, to make sure you don't have it in your possession. Because if you have it in your possession, you have it in your system, somebody can use it. And that's why we say the possession of it is the problem. Thank you.
Senator Escobel.
Mr. Chairman, I guess it's pretty well known that I'm an electronic dinosaur. But I was just wondering if, in regard to all these electronic devices, I was just wondering if there were any high school students or middle grade students at the committee that might have addressed some of these electronic devices. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Question. Further questions? Okay, question having been called, all those in favor of Senator Peterson's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 68, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 68 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 47.
Senate File 47, School Finance Amendments. sponsored by the Education Committee, an act relating to school finance. It was referred to Committee Number 4. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Anderson, 02. Senators Barnard, Cole, Landon, Rothfuss, Senator Cole, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Coe?
Mr. Chairman, I'd move that when the committee of the whole rise and report it do so with a do pass recommendation on Senate File 47. I would also move the Standing Committee Amendment, and for an explanation of the bill and the Standing Committee Amendment, I would defer to Senator Rothfuss.
Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, this is largely a bookkeeping piece of legislation. School finance amendments, it actually sounds like it does more than it does. But what you see on page 2, there's a little bit of language change about incorporating into our models for our education system that we use education accountability information collected to support our education accountability efforts and include that in the monitoring process for data reporting and analysis. And then what you see on pages 3 and 4 is some non-codified legislation, which is changing a couple of parameters. Now, what I'd like to do at this time is explain what the parameters are and make it very clear. We're talking about a model that tracks with our expenditures for our education system. What we're trying to look at is effectively a model that is a cost-based model to try and see what we're really paying for various components that go into education. We use the information from that model to then decide whether or not it's time to raise the actual payments for various components. So there's two models here, one that actually leads to payments and one that tracks along with our expenditures to make sure that our model is cost-based. What we're changing through this piece of legislation in the non-codified section on page 4 are two categories, the educational materials category, which we tracked as having a 2.78% modification reflecting an annual change measured by the BLS Producer Price Index for office supplies and accessories. And then in little 2, Romanet 2, an energy category of model components that you can see actually went down 4.63%, reflecting an annual change based on the commercial electric power. Those are decreasing in the model that we use to track the expenditures, but it does not change any actual expenditures. So we need to clarify that through the non-codified, but again, it won't change any actual expenses. We're just tracking along as we get input. If these change substantially enough, we may have to change the true funding model and give more money, or perhaps it could go down and we could, you know, give them less money. I guess that's theoretically possible. We're not anticipating that anytime soon. But I'll clarify, or just make hopefully crystal clear, Mr. Chairman, that it doesn't change the actual funding expenditures. It's just a situation for tracking. I'd ask for questions on that before I move to the amendment, because the amendment's actually entirely different.
Okay. First, let's have the reader read the amendment in. Anybody that has questions, please stand, and I'll turn your mic on.
Senate File 47, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 1.
Senator Hines.
Mr. Chairman, my question wasn't on the amendment. Do you want the question on the bill at this time?
On the bill.
As you explained about the cost adjustment would be in the consultant recommendation, but not to the block funding. Doesn't this, we use that model to fund, and if we don't follow it, doesn't that open it up to criticism? Mainly, well, it says this one area was up 2.78 and you didn't adjust the cost. By doing it this way, doesn't it open us up to more criticism on not following the model?
Senator Rothfuss.
Mr. Chairman, addressing that point, We have effectively two models. One is a cost-based model that we use to track our expenditure model. If there's a substantial deviation between the two, then we are obligated to change the real funding model. What we've determined is that although we're making changes within certain components of the cost-based model, they are not substantial enough that we felt as a committee compelled to change the real funding model because they offset and they were relatively small. If there had been a substantial increase or decrease in some way, then we would have been obligated, as the good senator from Campbell County suggests, to make a true change to the model.
Further questions on the bill? Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, and it's a subject I almost hesitate to bring up, but we have had in the past year or so several episodes of violence in the schools where an outside party that was mentally deranged came in and shot a bunch of people, or attempted to in the case of the California case. I think they suppressed it. Your first line of defense against that is your mental health system, but for some fundamental reasons, it can't be perfect. It seems to me you could make a good argument that it would be useful from a security point of view for our schools, particularly our larger schools, to have some personnel on site who were armed, had access to firearms at the school, and were trained in when and how to use them in an emergency. Would it be a germane amendment to this bill to add funding for such training, perhaps even in a nominal amount, but funding for such training to our school finance model? So if a school decided it was wise to train, and you wouldn't necessarily have to be the same people in any school. Some schools it might make, the janitor might be the one that would be the best one to do it, and others it might be the principal. And you might want to well keep that secret as to who it was, so that you were raising an additional obstacle to somebody who wanted to come in with violent intentions from the outside, that they knew they might encounter an armed adult who was trained and properly trained in when and how to use deadly force. Would this be an appropriate vehicle for something like that? And it's a question, would that be germane to this bill?
Senator Coe.
Mr. Chairman, in answer to my good friend from Natrona County, I don't think it would be, because this bill specifically addresses the monitoring process that we constantly go through in looking at the different components in the prototypical block grant model. So this is only a monitoring bill of the different components, and I don't believe it would be germane.
Senator Scott.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, and that's why I asked. I thought there would be a risk that it might not be. And so I guess, Mr. Chairman, just close that subject out. I would urge the Education Committee in the next interim to think about that as a possible addition to our model as a sensible way of approaching some of these security needs that doesn't turn our schools into an armed camp, but does give some additional protection to our students.
Further questions on the bill? Further questions? Would you want to move to the amendment, Senator Rothfuss?
Mr. Chairman, I believe I would. Mr. Chairman, the amendment is still conceptually within the same monitoring reporting process and looking at the consultant funding model and the tracking model, but it moves over to the acquisition and use of longitudinal data. And I believe we've already moved, but I'll move it again, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 47, in case that wasn't officially moved. What this amendment does is it adds access to the retirement board data for use in calculating some of the retirement information for teachers and within the school system. Now, you can see in little b, this is on page 1 of the amendment, lines 21 through 27. It provides authorization for access to retirement system information, which is maintained by the board, to the Department of Enterprise Technology Services for use by designated state agencies in supporting the Education Resource Block Grant Model Monitoring Process. That's just what we were talking about with regard to this tracking model that goes along with the actual block grant resources, and then the implementation of that, and the statewide education longitudinal data system and education accountability systems. We've heard through testimony over the last couple of years that it would be very useful in this process to understand better where teachers are going when we're calculating market pressures. So we have some teacher turnover. We have teachers throughout the state that are leaving, and we have a difficult time in some instances tracking and understanding where they're going, whether they're going out of state, whether they're quitting, whether they're retiring, or what it is that's going to happen to them after they're done, after they leave the system. There's been a request for access to that information. We took it very seriously. The reason this is coming as an amendment was because the first draft that was in the original piece of legislation was actually too open for the comfort of the committee. We asked ETS and Workforce Services to go back and have another look at it, narrow it down to ensure that there were restrictions in place that gave comfort with regard to the privacy. And you can see under A's, A, B, and C here, some further qualifications on this amendment indicating that data access shall be granted to those data elements identified under agreement between the Department of Enterprise Technology Services, the designated state agency performing data analysis for purposes specified by this paragraph in the board. They have to come to a specific MOU with regard to what data can be handed over and give justifications for that. And then you can see further under C that privacy protection and use of data accessed under this paragraph shall be specified by agreement between the Department of Enterprise Technology, the designated state agency, and the board, with assurances to the board that proper safeguards are instituted by the department and the designated agency to maintain data security and confidentiality. We further discussed with ETS about how that would work, and we were given very good testimony with regard to the fact that they will only give non-aggregated or non-anonymous data when it's absolutely essential. So they'll be doing the due diligence there to make sure that the privacy is protected to the greatest extent possible based on a clear demand for specific data, and they'll be weighing that out also. So we felt a lot better, and we supported this particular amendment after earlier versions of it were not satisfactory to the committee. With that, I'd entertain any questions on this particular amendment, which is obviously substantially different from the previous discussion.
Questions on the amendment? Senator Schiffer.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. A couple things come to my mind, and this data is very personal data. No question about it. This is tracking individuals. And in the most individual, that's how personal it is. And the presentation was they need this information because it's useful. Now, useful is a pretty low bar. My question is, what is useful? Is this just because you guys want to have a vague idea of what's going on? No, you're not getting a vague idea. You are getting an individual idea by prying into people's private records. I think that the standard should be something a little bit higher, no, should be a lot higher than just useful. This kind of invasion, useful, it's not a proper criteria. Tell me how bad you need it.
Senator Coe.
Well, Mr. Chairman, we take the monitoring process as dictated by the Supreme Court that the model will be cost-based very seriously. And this is one little piece of the puzzle that we haven't accessed. And believe me, we took it very serious in committee because the privacy provisions that are out there I take them very seriously and our whole committee does. But the Supreme Court requires us to the best of our ability, to make sure that the model is cost-based. We constantly do labor market studies, utilities, whatever else is in the model. We're always looking at that to try to monitor that and stay up to date on it. So this is a very useful tool for us. This is the one little piece of the puzzle that we haven't accessed yet and that we felt that we have to access in the longitudinal data that we acquire. So this is the one last piece of the puzzle that we haven't accessed.
Senator Anderson, District 2.
Thank you. To address the question as to whether or not this information would be useful, it's within my vision, and I think many of us, as we look to the future as to what educational reform will bring, most certainly the teacher will remain a most central, most integral, most important figure within the classroom. So if we're going to make adjustments in regard to our ability to deliver instruction, our ability to make change, our ability to create achievement, we have to have not so much personal information in regard to that integral component, the teacher, but professional information. And we can then determine ability to which are the best teacher training institutions for which our teachers are coming. It will determine, to some degree, I think, the type of training that they received at those effective or ineffective institutions. It will probably help us determine, if we lose any of those folks, where they might have gone and what might have driven them and what we might then do to attract them back or what might have done to keep them. And those kind of professional questions that we need to deal with. Now, I'm not a technologist, and we all have a level of identity theft and all the things in terms of that. But given my limited expertise, one of the reasons that we've hired our chief information officer is to give us his best expert advice in regard to how that information is extracted, how it's got, for what purpose, and whether or not that purpose meets the test, and a whole other litany of criteria in conjunction with what we heard from the Department of Workforce Development and how they use that. But the point of it is I think we're all attempting to be very careful in regard to personal information as well as the professional information, but it's going to be, I think, an important tool for us in order to design kind of the RFP that we want in order to attract that very important teacher component within the classroom. And I think that it's going to be very, very helpful in designing the kind of criteria we want for recruiting and retaining such individuals. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Further questions or comments on the standing committee amendment? Hearing none.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Roffes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I did just want to clarify a couple of things there. The first point I wanted to clarify is that we're not getting new data as a state. It's a sharing of data between departments, which still is a privacy concern because you're spreading it around. But I did want to clarify we're not drawing in new data that we didn't have previously. It's a matter of Agency A handing it to Agency B and then using it in a new way, which is a little bit different than actually acquiring new data. The other thing that I would say is I'd encourage everybody to support this amendment. And if there is still concern regarding the level of privacy, we can amend on second reading to be a little more specific about what level of information flow we can achieve. In other words, we could say only anonymized data, only aggregated data, things along those lines can further remedy that privacy concern if the body wants to do that. So I'd still encourage you either way, regardless of how you feel on the security issue, to support this because it is a valuable piece. It's just a matter of trying to get to the right level of privacy versus openness and access to information, and I think the body can work on that in second reading. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you. I guess as I heard the explanation, my concern grows with respect to, I'm not certain yet that it's been explained what information is being sought to be achieved. I think the best explanation was we're trying to look to see where these people retired to, and I guess about all you could get is what's their address, whether they're taking their retirement checks in Wyoming or New Mexico or whatever. You know, if you want this information, we start doing exit exams or exit interviews and find it out. But in the information we have here, it says it doesn't identify the information that has been delivered, and it doesn't talk about the purposes specified. It says specified by the paragraph, but other than your forwarding address, I don't know what else is there. I guess I'm curious now what it is you're looking for, and if it's all just the forwarding address, really, how does that help you? I mean, I understand through the accountability, trying to find longitudinal assessment, where are people leaving to? I suppose if they're all going to Nevada and they're it's one thing if they're people that are retiring early and then going on to another educational career in another state, if that's what you're looking for, but I wonder if there's a better way to get that information. And if that's all we're looking for, why don't we specify that?
Senator Rothfuss.
Mr. Chairman, for second reading, I'd look into that a little bit more and try and get a better answer for the Majority Leader. My understanding is very consistent with what he outlined, in that a lot of what we're looking for is where those checks are being sent, so that we understand whether somebody's retiring early and then taking another job or staying in the state or switching jobs or whatever the case may be. And a lot of that goes to our understanding of the economic pressures on salaries and whether we're attracting and keeping the best candidates or whether we're doing something in such a way that other states are able to draw away our teachers from us. So that's effectively the type of analysis, but I'll try and come back with a better answer on second reading.
Senator Nicholas.
Mr. Chairman, I guess part of when you begin to provide this information to state agencies, which I assume could be folks that get at the school district level, but you might, as an employee, begin shopping your options and communicating with the retirement board or the retirement system to find out what would happen if you retire this year. And that might be a very private decision that you don't want anybody to know that you're thinking about it. So I think we ought to proceed with some caution here.
Further discussion, comments, questions? Question having been called, all those in favor of Senator Rothfuss's motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 47, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
The chair is in doubt. All of those in favor, please stand. All of those opposed. Yes. Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 47 has passed. We are back on the bill. Anything further? Question having been called, all those in favor of Senator Cole's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 47, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 47 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that the Committee of the Whole beg leave to rise and sit again.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Mr. President.
Huh?
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
What do you say? This desk or that desk?
Mr. President, I move that we recess until 2 p.m.
Announcements, Senator Geis.
Mr. President, your committee number 5 will meet up on adjournment tonight to take up Senate File 75, Honor Farm Horse Program, Senate File 89, Veterinary Techs, Senate File 90, Administration Control of Acquired Institutional Lands.
Senator Hines.
Mr. President, your Appropriation Committee asked me to make the announcement that they would meet Friday, January 18th at 8 a.m., Room S1, to take up Senate File 65, Enticement of a Minor, Senate File 50, Strip Searches, Senate File 70, Land Possessors, Duty to Trespassers, and Senate File 92, Trespass Civil. Excuse me, I got the wrong notice. I have about 3 of them here. Excuse me. Mr. President, the Appropriation Committee will meet Thursday, January 17th. That's 15 minutes after the noon recess. And we'll take up Senate File 106, Project Funded by Abandoned Mine Land Funds. Senate File 76, Bighorn Sheep Relocation, and Senate File 60, Medicaid Reform.
Senator Coe.
Mr. President, your committee number 4, Education. This is an early announcement, but there's some interest in the bills we have. We'll meet tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock over here in S11 by the smoking lounge to continue work on Senate File 77, Community College Construction, and the bill that's generated some interest, Senate File 63, School District Special Reserve Funds.
Senator Peterson.
President, your committee number 3, again, just a reminder that we are meeting in 30 minutes up in our room S16 to review to take on Senate File 109, Highway and Road Funding Severance Taxes.
Further announcements. Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, and I appreciate the backup from my colleague from Campbell County. That's real teamwork. Mr. President, your Judiciary Committee will meet Friday, January 18th at 8 a.m. in room S1 to take up Senate File 65, Enticement of a Minor, that's a continuation from Wednesday. Senate File 50, Strip Searches. Senate File 70, Land Possessor, Duty to Trespasser. And if we have time, Senate File 92, Trespass Civil Penalty.
Further announcements. Senator Emmerich.
Thank you, Mr. President. I just want to announce the Cheyenne Chamber of Commerce.
Mic's on. You just got to...
Sorry, Mr. President. I just wish to announce that the Cheyenne Chamber of Commerce is having a business after hours get-together at the Wyoming State Museum from 5 to 7, and all are welcome. And it's presented by Cameco Resources, Wyoming's premier uranium company. Thank you, Mr. President.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. Folks, on the Management Council, along with the Wyoming Women's Legislative Caucus, has made an arrangement to have an expert come teach you executive speech coaching. This is going to take place on Saturday morning, and it'll be 9 a.m. to 10:30 at room 302. And there are the skill sets that you will require, but you got to like this one. If you attend this, and you should, because we're actually paying for it, and it's cool, but using this for management success in public venues will build your image, reputation, and your identity. But it's, no, seriously, we'll send out the notice later. When you're making your weekend's plans, you might give consideration to be here. Attend this at 9 a.m. to 10:30. It's an effort to provide skill sets for public speaking.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion's adopted. The Senate will stand in recess until 2 p.m.